It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
Well, welcome to the Amber May Show. I am so glad that you joined me this week. And we have a very important topic that we are talking about this week. And we are talking about child abuse. And, you know, it happens all the time. And I think that as society, we need to do something more to protect the little ones who can't protect themselves. And this show this week is going to be a PG-13 type show. So if you have young children, please don't play this show around your young children. This is for mature audiences only. Joining me today is Tom Richardson. He himself has gone through child abuse, and he's going to share his story with us about what he's gone through, but he also has victory in it as well, and so we're going to talk about that. Thank you, Tom, for joining us today and being brave enough to share your story.
Thanks for having me. You know, as you're opening there in the intro, it kind of made me think, you know, that abuse just isn't, like you said, how it's so prevalent, it happens all. And I think one thing I want people to understand too is that whether it happens once or, in my case, for the 13 straight years, you know, from 5 until 18 years old, it's just as bad. The effects of it, the lifelong effects of it. And a lot of people, and I think unfortunately in today's society, think that, well, we can, you know, if it happens once or it's a little rough or something, they call it discipline, you know. And I'm not the spokesman for how things should be done, but having experienced what I did, my point of view is a little different, in that if we think about how we treat our children as if the Savior were sitting there right next to us,
mm-hmm.
what would we do? I'm pretty sure that everybody listening would probably do something different in how
probably.
They treat their children. So my personal story of abuse, you know, is, and like, you know, it's tragic. The tragedy is that it happened for 13 years from an adopted family. I was, you know, adopted at 5 years old, and from 5 until 18, it started week one. Started week one, and I remember the very first time I took a cookie out of the cookie jar. It's 5 years old, and she broke my left arm because of it, you know, just twisting it up behind my back. You know, progressive, you know, as a 5 year old, you're starting to, I was in a foster home for 2 years. So I was with my birth mother from birth to three to five, I was in a foster home. And at five, I was adopted by the Richardson family. Well, for a child, that's kind of a traumatic transition. You know, you're not sure where you are. You don't understand at 5 years old, hey, that's my family, or that's my, you know, my new family, my, you know, new parents. And it was kind of a tragic thing in the sense that, you know, at that early age, I wet my pants once in a while, or if you wet the bed, she would come and push my face into it. At an early age, she started making me defecate on the floor and eat it in front of her, urinate on the floor and lick it up in front of her. This happened several times, I mean, over and over, over the next 13 years. Along with that, being tied to my bed, sometimes for a couple hours, sometimes for a day. Sometimes I wasn't even allowed to go to school because I was tied to my bed all day. Sometimes naked, sometimes dressed. But a lot of times if I was naked, she would punch me in private areas. If I was laying face down, she would actually use a broomstick and insert it into me. You know, she would tie my arms to a chair while I'm sitting in it, poke them with a needle until my arms were bleeding. And I was screaming, pleading for her to stop. She would tie me up in the garage to a post, you know, like one of the beams and support beams in the garage, and tie me to it with my hands behind my back and beat me with a 2x4 while I was naked. You know, to the point where sometimes I remember waking up in that situation where I wake up and she's yelling at me.
So you'd pass out.
Yeah, eventually. And a lot of times I think it was because of the head blows. Because I was hit a lot of time in the head too. You know, she's swinging, swinging, and I would duck. Or
not, you know, just her hands, but with objects?
Yeah, with an actual 2x4. She used to, oddly enough, it's funny how you can remember the details, but she would grab a pot holder and grab the 2x4 with it because she didn't want to hurt her hand as she, you know, beat me and tortured me. Intentionally trying to hurt me. So it's like she didn't want to be hurt, but, you know, obviously didn't care what was happening to me. And a lot of times I would just wake up and she'd be yelling at me, "You wake up, you know, you beepity, you know, beep," and you know, hitting me to wake me back up. And I would wake back up.
You never thought to tell your adopted father about it?
You know, one thing, growing at that very, when it first started, no, because I didn't, you're in such shock, you don't know what's going on, what to do, how to react to it. But as I got older, she would say to me, "If you tell anybody, including your father, I'll kill you." Now,
so when you're already getting beat down,
yeah,
I mean, and she's telling you she's going to kill you, you believe that?
Well, you do it. I don't know what the age was, but it transitioned as you know, because you're going to think that things like, I mean, she would put me in the tub and make me stand. She would boil water and pour them on my feet, you know, boiling water off the stove onto my feet, blistering them. You know, hold me underwater in the tub, choke me, you know, hold me against the wall, choking me, holding me by the neck, punching me in the face with a pot or a pan or frozen meat, you know, which I have scars from, you know, in the head.
It's so strange because normally when people adopt, you know, you're choosing that kid.
Yeah.
So this behavior is so bizarre.
It's bizarre. And like you said, in the sense that, yeah, family adopts because normally they're nurturing and caring.
Yes.
Want to give love.
Yes.
You know, to a child. They had three of their own daughters, and they adopted another boy who was my brother. He's a year younger than me, but adopted from a different mom and dad. He was adopted like 6 weeks old. So when I was adopted at 5, he was 4. He had been with the family since he had been about 6 weeks. Now, some of the abuse happened to him, and this is an open conversation between my siblings and I. It's like a few things would happen to him. Nothing happened to my sisters, but as I say that, I want people to understand they saw it. And sometimes that breaks my heart even more.
Right.
That, not that I just went through this, but that they had to witness it. You know, there's great...
That had to mess them up somewhat mentally, too, to be witnessing their mom just destroying their brother. I mean, that messes with you mentally. It has to.
Well, when it does, and I think they've had to deal with it in their own ways. You know, it's been a survival for me, so I can only imagine. I know what my survival has been like, but I can only imagine what theirs has been over the years. And it's been 30 years. What I want to emphasize too is that it has no certain demographic. A lot of people think abuse happens, and, you know, however they think, whatever they think. Some people think it happens in poor, you know, families, and some things it happens in third world countries. You know, it doesn't happen to spiritual people or spiritually driven people. I was adopted by a Mormon family that really has an emphasis on families, you know, kind of known for that, and yes, families and love, and generally the people are. But here's a person who, a lady, and I don't even call her mom, by the way, and I'm fine with that, but who, this is say for analogy's sake, on Sunday put on a, you know, a different face and was well revered in the church, you know. And
but did anyone see marks on you at the church? And,
you know,
did you talk to the priest or whatever men?
Yeah, yeah, I actually did. There, a lot of times when you're a younger child, you grow up in what they call primary. So it's kids your age, you're doing activities, you know, during the week together and stuff. And as you got older, I was in what they call young men's groups. So, yeah, actually over the years, I know I sat down with at least six different bishops, a couple young men's leaders, a scout leader, and nobody ever at one point did anything. What the bishops did is called Richardson parents in to his office to interview them, and you basically say, "Hey, no, this is what happened," you know, or "This is what Tom's saying happened." And
No, that's going to make it worse for you when you get home.
Well, that's exactly what happens, because even though she told me all these times, I'll kill you, there's a survival instinct that you just want it to stop. And the problem is that every time I did that, I knew I was going to pay for it.
But you were hoping for the chance, right?
I was hoping for the small chance of it stopping, because even if she got so mad and finally took my life,
at least it'd be over.
It would be over. And it would be known. It would be validated. And to me, that's what I'm starting to understand now as an adult. That's all I've really wanted, is validation. You know, every time it got swept under the rug by church leaders. And the problem is that I think people get too set on, we have to protect, and this is several religions, that we have to protect the church as a whole before we protect the children.
That's pitiful.
It is, because
that's the wrong mentality.
It
might be out there, but that is the wrong mentality. And that, you know, all those men that you went to in the church, God's going to have a reckoning with them one day.
Yeah.
How come you didn't help my little servant?
Right.
You know, this story that you just told me reminds me of the Good Samaritan story, where all these Jewish people, even priests, wouldn't stop and help the Samaritan.
Right.
Was beat down. And yet it, you know, so it took, it's just so pitiful. It was Samaritan that helped the Jewish person. And the Samaritans and the Jews didn't get along very well. But all these religious people walk by this guy. And that is not the right mentality. It took this Samaritan, who was despised by the Jewish people, to help him.
Right.
I mean, that is so wrong on so many levels leaders in your church weren't even helping you.
It is. And it's funny, because a lot of times, as I've shared this, and like I said, it's been several years. The problem is PTSD has no time frame, and I've been diagnosed with complex PTSD. I'm getting ready for my 9th surgery on Monday, the most ninth orthopedic surgery.
Dang.
And, you know, it sends chills through my body because of I've gotten flack from church leaders, you know, in the past, and I've asked, well, why didn't anybody do anything? And it's funny, a lot of times the response I get is, well, they probably didn't know what to do. They did. And as a child, I wouldn't have been able to understand. As an adult and as a parent myself, I have two amazing daughters who I cherish. And I look at that and I go, if somebody came to me and said, my child or this child is being beat, it wouldn't take me, regardless of what I went through, it wouldn't take me but a few moments to call the authorities.
And that's
they're
why,
the ones who investigate.
That's why God has authorities here on
that's
earth.
Exactly
because
why.
You know what? People are going to do what they want to do, and they're going to choose to do what they want to do.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that hurt other people like you've experienced.
Yeah.
And people say, well, if God was so wonderful and he's so loving, why did he let this happen to me? He didn't want it to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing called free will, and people get to choose. Are they going to do what God asked them to do, or they're not going to?
Right.
And apparently your mother decided she wasn't going to do what God had wanted her to do, because there's no way God's sitting there saying, oh, I'm so glad she's hurting him.
Yeah.
Because you know what? God loves you more than you could even imagine. He knows every hair on your head. He knows when you wake up, when you lie down. He sings over you. He knitted you together in your mother's womb. I mean, it's just, there's no amount of love that God sent his son to die for you, so you can't tell me that he's loving that. So what he did is he set up an organization to help the ones who are weak, who are little, who don't have a voice, to be their protectors.
Yeah, and it's so true, because that's, you know, the hesitation from church leaders was wrong, because there are police officers out there. That's what they're trained to do. That's what they do. I know God sustains them when they do it. I know that he guides them when they do it, because you think about what they, just on a side note, what they see every day, what they deal with, isn't right either. Because like you said, there's so many mean people out there doing mean things to each other. And those are free agency choices. Just like the free agency of the Richardson mother to do those things to me, it was the free agency choices of these leaders to do nothing.
Tom, we are at the end of today's program. This isn't the end of the story. I'd love for you to come back and let's pick up where we left off next week, okay?
You bet.